and everything in it is made possible by listeners like us.
Hi! We are the Watkins family.
The seven of us live near St. Paul, Minnesota.
We are enjoying our time together as we teach, learn, and work from home.
We hope you enjoy today's program.
Good morning. What perspective should Christians have when they see business owners defying shutdown orders? And how do we draw the line between healthy skepticism and conspiracy theories? We'll talk about all that with John Stone Street.
That's ahead on Culture Friday. Also, we could all use a few laughs these days. Thankfully, Jerry Seinfeld has that covered in his new comedy special.
Remember when we first got texts? Not really. Can't really remember that. I can't either. I mean, I know that we have it. I know we didn't used to have it. Did they tell us we were getting it?
It's Friday, May 15th. This is The World and Everything in It from listener-supported World Radio. I'm Megan Basham.
And I'm Myrna Brown. Good morning.
Up next, Kent Covington has the news.
North Carolina Republican Senator Richard Burr stepped aside as chairman of the Senate Intelligence Committee on Thursday. That after the FBI served a search warrant for his phone as part of an ongoing insider trading investigation. Burr told reporters that removing himself from the committee was the right thing to do.
This is a distraction to the hard work of the committee and the members, and I think the security of the country is too important to have a distraction.
FBI officials showed up at Burr's home with the warrant on Wednesday. The Justice Department is investigating whether Burr broke the law with a well-timed sale of stocks just before the coronavirus caused markets to plunge. Burr's attorney said last month that the law is clear that any senator can participate in stock market trading based on public information, quote, as Senator Burr did. Nearly 3 million more laid-off workers applied for jobless benefits last week as the viral outbreak led more companies to slash jobs. That comes as Democrats and Republicans on Capitol Hill remain in a standoff over next steps. House Democrats have proposed another $3 trillion in aid, but GOP leaders want to evaluate the impact of the trillions in aid already approved, and they say the House bill is highly partisan and bloated with pet projects. Republicans say former members of the Obama administration, including Joe Biden, have a lot of explaining to do. That in light of new documents related to the investigation of former National Security Advisor Michael Flynn. Wisconsin Senator Ron Johnson told Fox News,
"It is, from my standpoint, pretty curious that the Vice President of the United States would be requesting unmasking, in this case of General Flynn, 8 days before he left office."
Biden's name appeared on a list of officials who asked for the documents that led to Flynn's unmasking, a list that also includes former White House Chief of Staff Dennis McDonough. Unmasking refers to revealing the identities of presumably innocent U.S. citizens named in intelligence reports. Andrew Bates, a spokesman for Biden's presidential campaign, responded. He said these documents simply indicate the breadth and depth of concern across the American government over reports of Flynn's talks with Russian officials. But Pennsylvania Senator Pat Toomey said GOP leaders plan to get to the bottom of it.
Lindsey Graham, the chairman of the Judiciary Committee, which is a committee that has jurisdiction over this, has told us he's going to have very thorough hearings.
An investigating agent with the FBI found no wrongdoing by Flynn and was ready to close the case. But former FBI department head Peter Strzok asked to keep it open, saying the seventh floor was involved, a reference to top-ranking officials. Special Counsel Robert Mueller later removed Strzok from the Russia probe after finding anti-Trump messages he exchanged with his mistress. Flynn eventually pleaded guilty to lying to Strzok and another agent, but he later sought to withdraw that guilty plea after evidence surfaced suggesting agents sought to entrap him and that Strzok heavily edited notes from his FBI interview. The Justice Department has since moved to drop the charges against Flynn. Immunologist Dr. Rick Bright made a sobering prediction in testimony before a House committee Thursday.
Our window of opportunity is closing. If we fail to improve our response now, based on science, I fear the pandemic will get worse and be prolonged. There will be likely a resurgence of COVID-19 this fall. It'll be greatly compounded by the challenges of seasonal influenza.
He said he believes the nation lacks a coordinated response to the pandemic And he added that America faces the, quote, darkest winter in modern history unless we prevent a rebound of the virus. Bright was removed last month from his job as head of the Biomedical Advanced Research and Development Authority. He said that's because he resisted a push to make the drug chloroquine more freely available to the public without close medical supervision, and a federal watchdog agency has found reasonable grounds to investigate his claims. Bright also said top officials at the Department of Health and Human Services ignored his early warnings months ago about a shortage of critical supplies like N95 masks. But HHS Secretary Alex Azar pushed back Thursday, saying his department was acting to prepare for the pandemic.
Everything he's complaining about was achieved. Everything he talked about was done.
President Trump dismissed Bright's testimony, saying he sounded like a disgruntled employee. Wisconsin Governor Tony Evers is warning of massive confusion after the state Supreme Court tossed out the Democrats' stay-at-home order on Wednesday. The court said his administration overstepped its authority by going around the legislature to renew the order. The court did not block local governments, though, from enforcing coronavirus lockdowns. But Evers said without a statewide standard, the ruling throws his state into chaos. He told CNN that with many restaurants and bars now reopening,
this will cause us to show hemp spikes across the state. There's no question about it.
But Republican Assembly Speaker Robin Voss pushed back, saying we already know local health departments have the ability to utilize their power if they feel it's unsafe. I'm Kent Covington, and straight ahead, business owners practicing civil disobedience, plus George Grant on our new pandemic vocabulary. This is The World and Everything in It.
It's Friday, the 15th of May, 2020. Glad to have you along for today's edition of The World and Everything in It. Good morning. I'm Megan Basham.
And I'm Myrna Brown. Google, YouTube, Facebook, and Twitter have all been cracking down on content they define as COVID misinformation. In some cases, that has meant things like removing videos that claim Bill Gates manufactured the virus so he can profit from a vaccine and insert microchips into the public. But it has also included deleting posts more aligned with traditional ideas about free speech, like YouTube removing a video of two urgent care doctors arguing for an end to shutdowns, or Facebook removing information about protests and rallies against stay-at-home orders. Here's Mark Zuckerberg defending this practice on Good Morning America.
We do classify that as harmful misinformation, and we take that down.
It's Culture Friday, and time to welcome John Stone Street, the president of the Colson Center for Christian Worldview. John, good morning.
Good morning.
So, John, I think part of the difficulty here is that we've seen similar suppression from the tech giants before, especially on subjects like gender, sexuality, or abortion. And I'd like to quote from a Breakpoint article by Shane Morris, and I'm thinking maybe you've heard of that guy.
Yeah, I'm not admitting anything.
Well, Shane says our increasing distrust of official stories and established knowledge is in some ways an understandable response to a cultural and political elite who have turned their backs on us. And then piggybacking on that, we had a world reader, Douglas Hagman, write in that based on his recent experience, temperate skepticism of the mainstream narrative is always a healthy thing. And I mean, along with some of the kookier stuff getting passed around, there have been stories that seem to bring up some legitimate questions about the accuracy of infection and death rate models. And I'm old enough to remember when the idea that the virus could have come out of a Wuhan lab was also roundly dismissed as conspiracy theory before it was later considered a real possibility. So I guess the question is, for the Christian, where does healthy doubt end and conspiracy theorizing begin?
This is a really hard question because we're doing it already in the context of misinformation and worldview latent information that passes as neutrality. And this has obviously been going on a long time. I mean, it'd be a lot easier to trust Facebook and Twitter and YouTube and some of these social media giants in their attempt to weed out bad information if they hadn't already proven their tendency to weed out conservative thought or religious thought as opposed to others. if they hadn't already kind of jumped on board. And we've got a whole culture, though, that is reflective of kind of the new idol of scientism. If you read through the Old Testament, you see this repeated phrase, thus saith the Lord. And now we've replaced that with thus saith science. And science then actually makes these kind of defining claims, or we're told that science makes these defining truthful claims. The science is settled, we say, and scientists say, and the majority of scientists, and the scientific consensus says. This is all a way of kind of establishing authority, when in reality, we don't know what we're doing. None of us. We don't know what we're doing. Governors don't know what they're doing. Scientists don't know what they're dealing with. Medical professionals are making it up as they go. And they've done pretty well, actually, across the board. But let's just admit a little humility and not pretend that the quote-unquote experts are infallible and that we somehow know more than the experts because, you know, we have a Facebook page where we found that secret video. It's foolish. Now, of course, for Christians, which was your question, we should be wiser than that. By the way, the other thing we have going on is that we have scientific and medical experts now making blanket policy decisions. And then you have, in particular, I think media outlets so oftentimes christening the words and the suggestions of certain people as long as it supports a given narrative. I mean, there has to be, I think, an understanding of historical context that we're not doing this in a vacuum, and there needs to be a little bit of humility about what we're dealing with. And those are probably two good places to start.
So while Twitter, Facebook, Google, and YouTube have largely aligned with governing powers, one tech titan has rediscovered Silicon Valley's rebel roots. Elon Musk filed a lawsuit claiming Alameda County was violating his due process and equal protection rights when they prevented him from reopening his Tesla plants. Now, Musk has called the lockdowns fascist, and he says the county is acting contrary to the governor, the president, our constitutional freedoms, and just plain common sense. Then on Tuesday, he reopened Tesla in defiance of shelter-in-place orders, daring local officials to come arrest him on the assembly line with his workers.
So, John, what are your thoughts on Musk's show of civil disobedience?
Well, I mean, I appreciate what he's trying to do and, you know, recognizing that he oftentimes is coming from a sort of scientistic transhumanist view that I just kind of condemned. But in this sense of trying to answer just the challenge that we're all facing, which are, you know, two things, just regulations that seem unwise, that seem inconsistent, and then also that tend to change and apply differently from one group to another. And that's, I think, the real challenge. And I'm not going to be one that, you know, says that the government's picking winners and losers intentionally, but is in many cases, are they picking winners and losers? Sure. I mean, here in Colorado, you know, the winners are the pot shots and the losers are the churches. And so, you know, what does that look like going forward? These are, again, uncharted territory. I will say, though, that we need to be willing to disobey when the time is right. But knowing when the time is right is different than immediately jumping on and drawing a lot of attention to yourself. And I think what's missing there is the good bit of wisdom that we see in the first chapter of Daniel, where Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego are given two alternatives, neither of which they find acceptable. And so rather than make a big deal about it, they quietly, instead of embarrassing the person in charge or embarrassing the person who works for the person in charge, they come up with a third alternative and a set of conditions and so on and so on and so on, and then trust the Lord. And I think there's probably not near enough right now third alternatives being invented. And I think that what we'll see is, just like we saw in the 2008 recession and what we saw in the Great Depression, we've seen at other points throughout history, certainly in the corporate space, those who invent and innovate rather than make a lot of noise are the ones that tend to come out on top. I think we also see that throughout the history of the church is that there's, you know, a good bit of innovation that is possible in front of us. And I think we need to double down on that side of things, maybe more than the heated rhetoric.
John, just a quick follow-up here, and this might be comparing apples to oranges, but when I think of civil disobedience, I think of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Any parallels that you can see?
Well, I think that one of the big parallels is the intended injustice and the maliciousness towards people of color in the United States, particularly African Americans, was certain and sure. And I think imputing the motives of government officials for being, you know, either anti-American, anti-freedom, anti-Christian is more than what we know. So I think what we have in this case is much more either somewhere between mistakes and even foolishness, then we have animosity and bigotry. And so I think going in upfront with that is probably a good distinction to make.
John Stonestreet is president of the Colson Center for Christian Worldview. John, thanks for being with us.
Thanks so much.
Additional support comes from Covenant Theological Seminary, offering a new church planting tract designed by church planters. More at covenantseminary.edu/plant.
In the town of Lund, Sweden, about 30,000 people gather in a park around this time every year for a local celebration. But obviously, amid a global pandemic, the town doesn't want thousands of people gathering in one place. So the question facing officials was, how do you keep them away? Trying to fence off and police a park of that size would be very costly. So the town came up with a creative solution, raise a stink. They decided to dump massive amounts of, and hold your nose, chicken manure in the park. The local council reasoned that the foul smell would discourage people from attending the Walpurgis night in the park. Council member Gustav Lundblad said it will stink, and so it may not be so nice to sit and drink beer in the park. And I suspect he's absolutely right. It's the world and everything in it. Today is Friday, May 15th. Thank you for turning to World Radio to help start your day. Good morning. I'm Myrna Brown.
And I'm Megan Basham. You know, Myrna, we reported yesterday on how graduates are passing a major milestone without traditional graduation ceremonies. And that got us thinking, why not give listeners a chance to recognize their graduates on the program?
Right. Such a fun way to say congratulations and let everyone in the world family celebrate with them. Well, this is open to anyone with a graduate to honor. And graduates, if you want to toot your own horn, that's fine too. Visit worldandeverything.org. Click on the Engage tab in the top menu, and then click on Record a Pre-Roll. You'll find all the instructions there.
Be sure to check that out, because there are a few things you need to do to make sure we can use the recordings. And speaking of recordings, we're also looking for a few more questions for our resident medical expert, Dr. Charles Horton.
Yes, he's coming back to do another special episode about the coronavirus. So if you have something you want to ask him, let us know. The best way to do that is to record yourself asking your question. Do it like you would record a pre-roll. Now, if you feel a little shy about hearing yourself on air, just send us your question by email. The address for that is feedback@worldandeverything.com.
All right. Well, coming next on The World and Everything in It, something we could all use a little more of these days, laughs. Under different circumstances, Jerry Seinfeld's new Netflix special, 23 Hours, might be something of a letdown. The comedian breaks no new ground. He braves no uncharted territory. Yet in a world living at arm's length, the old trivial observations that are Seinfeld's stock in trade suddenly feel as comforting as a mediocre meal at a convenient corner diner. His cranky rants about intrusive friends and the exhaustion of maintaining an active social life take on a newly nostalgic hue.
Just want to be out. This is out. People talk about going out. We should go out. Let's go out. We never go out. Well, this is it. Now, the good thing about being out is you don't have to be out for long. Just long enough to get the next feeling, which you're all going to get. And that feeling is, I gotta be getting back.
There's no doubt that if Seinfeld were a young up-and-comer, some of his material would probably be dismissed as cliched, hacky even. His musings on matrimony are about as cutting-edge as Henny Youngman's old, take my wife, please, routine. And yet, the man poised to become comedy's first billionaire knows how to sell corny as classic better than just about anybody standing up in front of a mic today.
When I was single, I had married friends. I would not visit their homes. I found their lives to be pathetic and depressing. Now that I'm married, I have no single friends. I find their lives to be meaningless and trivial experiences. In both cases, I believe I was correct. Whichever side of marriage you're on, you don't get what the other people are doing. I can't hang out with single guys. If you don't have a wife, we have nothing to talk about. You have a girlfriend? That's wiffle ball, my friend. You're playing paintball war. I'm in Afghanistan with real loaded weapons. Married guys play with full clips and live rounds.
And let's be honest, the it's funny because it's true adage is the reason marriage jokes became such a staple in the first place.
Because a man in marriage will not survive if he does not have a strong brain-to-speech guard gate control filtration system. You don't just talk in marriage. It's risky. When I'm with my wife, who I love so dearly, and a thought enters my head, the first thing I think is, well, I know I can't say that. Maybe I could say I heard someone else say it. And then she and I can share a warm moment together, agreeing on what an idiot that person must be. And we get along great.
I should note here, while Seinfeld's latest routine is officially rated PG, there's enough language to merit more caution than that. It may be mild compared to most big comedy acts, but it still jars to hear old Jer taking the Lord's name in vain. He's taught his fans to expect better from him. It's too bad because when he's at his best, his insight into humanity's foibles is as incisive as ever.
Remember when we first got texts? Not really. Can't really remember that. I can't either. I mean, I know that we have it. I know we didn't used to have it. I don't know how we got it. I don't remember. Did they tell us we were getting it? Was there an announcement that we're getting it? There was no commercial. I don't remember a commercial. Want some human contact, but kind of had it up to here with people. Try text. Need to get someone some information, but don't want to hear their stupid voice responding to it? You need to be on text.
But even when the jokes are mediocre, we still kind of want to press our nose against the TV glass just to see the audience sitting close together, sharing a laugh. The image offers hope that eventually we'll be able to move forward into a past we used to take for granted. As Seinfeld has always pointed out, the only thing more grating than being around other people is not being around them.
The human is a social species, as we can see. We tend to congregate, aggregate, and coagulate together. We live here in New York City. That makes no sense. If you take a plane out of New York and you look down at the city, what do you see around the city? Why, there's nothing but empty, open, beautiful, rolling land out there. Nobody's there! Let's pack in here tight! Uncomfortable, on top of each other, traffic, congestion! That's what we like!
We may not all like congestion, but we were all made for fellowship and to bear the petty offenses of all those other annoying humans. We miss them when they're gone.
Today is Friday, May 15th. Good morning. This is The World and Everything in It from listener-supported World Radio. I'm Myrna Brown.
And I'm Megan Basham. Next up, George Grant on how extraordinary circumstances change the way we speak.
Benjamin Jowett, in his Victorian idiomatic translation of Plato's Republic, famously rendered one of the philosopher's proverbial quips as, "Necessity is the mother of invention." He might have just as well asserted that it is also the mother of vocabulary. After all, it is almost always the case that the emergence of new circumstances will necessitate new lexicons to describe them. It can't have escaped the attention of any of us that the COVID-19 novel coronavirus pandemic has not only dramatically changed our lives, it has dramatically changed our language. Our everyday conversations are now cluttered with epidemiological quarantine jargon. We speak about asymptomatic risks, case clusters, frequency curves, and incidence rates. We find ourselves repeating statistics about droplet transmission, herd immunity, super spreaders, and incubation periods. I've even heard a few folks speak with newfound authority on viral seasonality, pathogenicity, and immunocompromised virulence, and even some about zoonoses. Perhaps more interestingly, the epidemic seems to have spread puns and slang faster than the virus itself. So now we dismally discuss Corona Session and Corona-geddon, leading inevitably to Depressorona. On the brighter side, many coronials find themselves corona-cocooning and corona-cuffing with their corona-teenies. I suppose that must mean that they're micro-socializing in an extended virtual happy hour. Inevitably, a few derogatory terms have also crept into our vocabulary. Skeptics and conspiratorialists are now disdained as COVID truthers or quarant trolls. Those who disregard social distancing guidelines are sometimes dismissed as being Wuhanified or COVIDiots. Protesters against the more draconian government lockdown decrees talk about the tyranny of an emerging epidemiocracy or COVID-1984. From the Quarantech apps that we're using to the Quarantips that we're trying, from the Quarantrend fashions that we're wearing or the Quarantough resolve that we're undertaking, it's evident that viral jests, jibes, and neologisms have run rampant. Rita Mae Brown has asserted that language is the roadmap of a culture. If that's the case, then our post-corona culture really is all over the map. I'm George Grant.
The Lord bless you and keep you. Make his face shine upon you and be gracious to you.
Next up on The World and Everything in It, the rise of virtual choirs during the pandemic. What you're hearing here is a viral video featuring singers and musicians from 65 different Christian churches and movements scattered all across the United Kingdom. The video is titled The UK Blessing, featuring a song written by Chris Brown, Cody Carnes, Carrie Job, and Stephen Furtick. The lyrics come from Numbers chapter 6 and is sung as a prayer over a hurting world. It's also meant to be a reminder that while church buildings may be closed, the church is very much alive. As of today, nearly 2.5 million people have watched the video.
Last month, 31 Nashville studio singers participated in a similar project. Using cell phones, tablets, and laptops, musicians recorded themselves singing at home during the first days of the stay-at-home order. The 1026 music group organized the virtual choir and edited them all together. The song? Horatio Spafford's Hymn of Hope, It Is Well With My Soul. Music by Philip Bliss and arranged by David Weiss. The song has been edited to fit our remaining space, so please enjoy.
When peace like a river attendeth my way, when sorrows like sea billows roar, whatever my life, thou hast taught me to say, it is well, it is well with my soul.
It is well, it is well.
true.
That Christ hath regarded
my helpless estate and hath shed his own blood for my soul.
It is well.
A lot of people to put this program together each week. Thanks so much to our team, Emily Bells, Mindy Bells, Paul Butler, Janie B. Cheney, Kent Covington, Laura Edgehill, Kristen Flavin, George Grant, Anna Johansson, Lee Jones, Nick Eicher, Onise Ohikari, Andre Sue Peterson, Bonnie Pritchett, Mary Reichert, Sarah Schweinsberg, and Cal Thomas.
Our audio engineers are Johnny Franklin and Carl Peets. Managing Editor J.C. Derrick and Editor-in-Chief Marvin Olasky keep us all on track. And it's you who make it all possible. You have our gratitude. Ephesians tells us to act with humility, gentleness, and patience, bearing with one another in love. Have a great weekend.